Hi, this is Scott Snibbe, host of A Skeptic's Path to Enlightenment. I've just released a new book called How to Train a Happy Mind that shares the accessible approach to Buddhism familiar to podcast listeners. The book features a foreword by His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and you can order it right now anywhere you buy books. There are many live events planned from March through August in New York, California, and New Mexico that I'll be attending in person with some of the great artists, authors, and activists you've heard on the podcast, like Robert Thurman, Laurie Anderson, and Sujata Baliga. Many of these events can also be streamed online. Go to our website at skepticspath.org for more details on the book and tour. I'm Scott Snibbe, and this is A Skeptic's Path to Enlightenment. Today we're doing something I've wanted to do for a really long time, which is get our talented producer, Tara Anderson, in front of the microphone to have a conversation together. And for our first conversation, we've chosen the slightly radioactive topic of vaccines, vaccines and compassion. Now, whatever your opinion on this issue, I hope that you'll stay with us for this conversation, because we're not trying to convince you one way or another, but discuss how to apply compassion around a serious and contentious issue. So Tara's joining us from Kentucky, where she lives and works with her husband and two kids in a red state, I believe. I'm joining you from California, a blue state. And first of all, hi, Tara.
Hi, Scott. A new step for both of us to try a little conversation here around something that's potentially very tricky, COVID vaccines in particular. We're saying vaccines, but this is really around the COVID vaccine. So first of all, I think we should say that both you and I are vaccinated.
That's right. We survived.
We chose to get vaccinated. We both have kids, and we're going to talk about how we're making the decision whether to vaccinate our children. Just this week, as we're recording, the CDC has recommended COVID vaccines for kids ages 5 to 11. And both you and I have kids in that age group. I have a kid that's a little older, and she is already vaccinated as well. And so is my husband, who is a hospital-based physician. So just for listeners to know where we personally stand on that issue, I think it's important to say. But we're not trying to convince anybody. This is not about making you think the way that we do. We want to talk about the ideas around compassion that can well up around this kind of personal decision that also has very public ramifications.
Yeah, yeah. And I should also mention, I grew up in an anti-vaccine household, which I'll tell some stories about later in the episode. And I also want to talk a little bit about how I felt about that growing up for people making a decision either way. The other thing is I also had some of the more uncommon side effects when I got vaccinated that were a little bit more severe. And I'll talk about those too and how I might have changed or not changed my decision if I'd known that was going to happen.
So with all of that said, and before we spout off with our own opinions too much, we took a look at what some other wise people, wiser than us, had to say about vaccination. How about the Pope? Let's start with the Pope. People listen to the Pope.
So I was talking to my wife about this episode, and she pointed me to this. The Pope in August recorded a video. I actually wish we could play it, but it's all in Spanish. So I'll have to be the Pope, unfortunately, the voice of the Pope. And he said something that I found very touching. He said, vaccination is an act of love. And I have more of the quote here. He said, being vaccinated with vaccines authorized by the competent authorities is an act of love. And contributing to ensure the majority of people are vaccinated is an act of love. Love for oneself, love for one's family and friends, love for all people. So that was, he said that in Rome on August 18th. He also talked about politics. You know, the thing about this current Pope is he's not too afraid of wading into political issues. Mm-hmm. And he also said that I quite like this. Love is also social and political, he said, and that individual small gestures of personal charity add up, overflowing into something universal that's capable of transforming and improving societies. I should also say he did mention God as well. That's a place Buddhists and Christians differ a little bit. But he said, thanks to God and to the work of many, we now have vaccines to protect us from COVID-19. They grant us the hope of ending the pandemic, but only if they're available to all and if we work together.
Yeah, this is such a tricky thing because in order for the vaccines to really work on a societal level, we all need to participate. So it's an individual decision that has far-reaching ramifications. And I know that's why this is so tricky for so many of us. It's not just a personal decision about whether you choose to eat meat or not, or what kind of pants you like to wear or whatever. It's a decision that has wide-reaching implications, but also asks us all to put our own bodies on the line. Someone with influence like the Pope saying that love is social and political, that's a really powerful statement. If Christians want to emulate Jesus Christ, then social and political love, that's a good way to do it.
What would Jesus do? Would Jesus get vaccinated?
Well,
we know that the Dalai Lama got vaccinated. He rolled up his sleeve and he was one of the first people to get vaccinated in India. He had pictures taken of it. The Dalai Lama, he actually didn't speak at length or quite as eloquently. He was quite blunt about this issue. I think to him, maybe it was a little more obvious. And he just said, getting vaccinated is very helpful and very good. That's what the Dalai Lama said. He said, people need to be vaccinated to prevent some serious problems.
There you go.
Pretty clear and direct. He didn't talk that much about compassion. It's just the obviousness to him of how important it was to do this.
Exactly. And I've heard, you know, a number of other spiritual leaders say something similar, that it's just the right thing to do, that it is not only helping yourself, but helping others. And for some people, I wonder if that argument about helping others really is very effective. Yeah. I'm not sure. I think we've seen various messages in public health here in the U.S. If you don't care about protecting your community, at least please protect yourself, because that may be what speaks to some people.
I think this starts to turn on this issue of how we communicate and how we get along with people who made the opposite choice. And we're going to talk about that a lot in a lot more detail. But there's a beautiful quote from Thich Nhat Hanh that we mentioned in an earlier episode about understanding other people. And I wanted to bring that up because, again, we don't want this to be divisive. And I think this quote is like a kind of peace bomb. It's from a book called Peace is Every Step, to help understand how to talk to people who have the opposite opinion, whatever side of this opinion you're on. So what Thich Nhat Hanh said is that blaming never helps. That was the title. It was just a two-paragraph essay that he put in his book. And he said, when you plant lettuce, if it does not grow well, you don't blame the lettuce. You look into the reasons it's not doing well. It may need fertilizer or more water or less sun. You never blame the lettuce. If somebody else does something that you don't like, that's our first thing in our society, is blame the other person. They're wrong, they're stupid. But here's how he says we should treat the other people around us. He says you treat them like lettuce. Like, are you going to yell at a lettuce for wilting or for not getting vaccinated?
I'm going to need to put this like on a post-it on my wall. You never blame the lettuce. That's good life advice. I love that.
But then he gets more to the practical without the metaphor. He says, blaming has no positive effect at all, nor does trying to persuade using reason and arguments, asterisk. No blame, no reasoning, no argument, just understanding. If you understand and you show that you understand, you can love and the situation will change. And so hopefully that's the angle that we can talk about how we deal with differing opinions as we go through this episode, which is more through understanding. We have a few stories, so we'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, exactly. And just those few lines that you shared, blaming has no positive effect at all, nor does trying to persuade using reason and arguments. That really stops my mind, because I have been trying to persuade a couple of people who I love very much and would love to feel comfortable spending time with. But I know that all of my reason and my arguments, it's not going to do it. And in at least one case with a family member, I have made the decision to preserve the relationship more than to try to convince this person to get vaccinated. And at the same time, I have to set my own boundaries for my own safety and my own security. Now, it says if you understand and you show that you understand, you can love and the situation will change. That doesn't mean the person that you want to get vaccinated will get vaccinated,
no,
right?
No.
The situation will change in other ways, but it doesn't mean that you're going to get your desired outcome. And I think a lot of what I have been working with personally on getting through this, as one of the Tonglen slogans reminds me, abandon all hope of fruition. You do what you do, and you can't be attached to the results. I think that quote can be a little tricky where you're like, okay, if I just understand them, then they'll do what I want.
Yeah.
That's not it either.
Yeah, it's not another path to manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have a bunch of different stories to talk about, quote, convincing people and some of our personal decisions. But let's talk a little bit more about authorities here. So what do doctors have to say about getting vaccinated?
Overwhelmingly, doctors advise it. Doctors are in favor of it. Doctors like Dr. Anthony Fauci, who has a long history in infectious disease and public health leadership, says, go do it. Now, there are a lot of people who don't trust him and other authorities for their own reasons. But I'm married to a doctor. I know a lot of doctors. They are all in favor of vaccination. Yeah. And for what it's worth, they're all in favor of vaccinating their kids as soon as possible as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's no surprise. Of course, you can find on the internet, you can find the odd doctor and nurse who don't get vaccinated and they have their reasons. But yeah, you were talking about parents. I was reading today, the vaccine just became available for kids today. So as we edit this episode, we'll probably, our kids will get vaccinated. But I saw something about a third of parents were not planning to get their young kids, the kids under 11, vaccinated yet. So that's a much bigger contingent.
Again, I think the idea of compassion plays into this, not only for your own children, but for the people around your children.
Yeah.
Because while children don't seem to get as sick themselves, they can certainly still be a vector for disease. And that is something to consider in making your decision.
I think that's a conversation each of us has probably had with friends sometimes, especially younger friends. I do know some people who haven't gotten vaccinated and they said, I'm not at risk and I don't really need to do it. And then I said, in my non-understanding mode, I said, you may kill somebody's grandma. Which probably isn't in line with what Thich Nhat Hanh recommends. But
it's tricky.
There's something funny happened because my family went to get our flu shots about 3 weeks ago. We were some of the first people in to get that here where we live. And it was so funny because I was talking to the two ladies administering it. And I said, you guys are like first in line for everything, huh? You already got your shots. And they said, no, both of them. That's what's funny. Both of them said, no, they both said, oh, we hate getting shots. Like we're putting it off. You give 200 shots a day and you didn't get your flu vaccine. They're like, no, I don't like it. And I think that's actually a good heart expanding story because even the people giving the shots have their own fears and their own reasons either for not doing it or for putting it off. Some people are really afraid of shots.
Fear of needles is a real thing, and I know that has been a barrier for some people. And with the COVID vaccine, some people feel really lousy for a day or two, and not everyone has a life that is set up where they can be sick and feel bad for a day or two and not miss work and that kind of thing. So that's another impediment to the shot. And that's on a systemic level, I think.
Why don't we go into this hard topic of convincing people and talk about it, not from an epidemiological perspective, but from a Buddhist perspective. Mm-hmm. So something really powerful about Buddhism that really impressed me about it is that evangelism is discouraged. It's so discouraged that even the Dalai Lama, almost every time I've seen him give a public talk, he actually says, don't become a Buddhist. He says, keep your own religion. Whatever religion you're in is probably the right one for you, what you were raised with, which of course is quite attractive to certain of us, especially like anti-authoritarian type people are very attracted by that kind of message. I think with that message of non-evangelism in Buddhism, it filters down to everything else in terms of trying to convince people of anything important.
Yes. You brought up an idea when we were preparing for this idea that you don't have to win. Who was it that said this to us?
Yeah, it was Zigar Khangchol Rinpoche. There's many other teachers who say this and write this. Pema Chodron writes a lot about the value of losing and what you do when awful things happen, just things you don't want to happen. This is a basic form of suffering. There's a long list of types of suffering in Buddhism, and one of them is not getting what you want and getting what you don't want. It's nice to have them enumerated, because then what happens, yes, you're like, okay, it's totally natural in the universe to not get what you want. And I want various people to get vaccinated. We have a family friend, actually, one of my daughter's schoolmates' mothers is really scared of getting vaccinated. We have our fears too, because our kids play together all the time. And we've set up some kind of stronger rules, you know, like they just play outside. I think acknowledging that the relationship is more important than winning in this case, yes, like to just work around that, find ways that we're comfortable with a little more risk and certain rules, because the relationship between our kids is important. The relationship with her is important. And I think it's really nice how we've navigated that as a family. Like, there's respect there. We even talk about the issue together, remain respectful. Keeping that love is so important. You can feel that. See, I lose it all the time. I lose it all the time. When I have it, it's so nice and it seems so easy. But then, like, as soon as I'm like critical or blaming, anything that builds that wall between myself and others, including that they should really get vaccinated, and then all these delusions start coming up of being really angry and judgmental and...
Yeah.
So that's a funny thing. Even from a selfish perspective, you want to be loving because it feels a lot better.
It feels better. It does. I absolutely understand that. I've had very similar reactions, especially in the region where I live. You know, a lot of people aren't wearing masks regularly in public. I had an experience recently where I went to the grocery store and I had such a bad attitude about everyone I saw without a mask on. And I came out of the grocery store really mad. And I thought, wait a minute, this is not good for me. This is not good for me to be furious at strangers. This is not healthy for me. I don't know these people. I don't know their lives. I can disapprove of this choice they've made. Mm-hmm. But I was stunned at the amount of anger that I had and how I was blaming these strangers that I don't even know. I was like, okay, I need to sit and look at this for a minute. First of all, is this good for me?
Yeah.
No, it is not. Yeah. So trying to remember that I can't control everyone. I can do what I need to do to keep my boundaries safe. So in the grocery store, that means that I wear a mask and I try to keep my distance from other people. Mm-hmm. But to let go of that anger. Yeah. And it's a much more pleasant trip to the grocery store or whatever.
I want to get back to the losing thing. You brought up the losing thing, though. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, I actually got really encouraged. I went and hung out with my aunt and uncle, who I hadn't seen for years down in LA. We were talking about people who don't get vaccinated. And my aunt said, oh, yeah, I convinced my cousin to get vaccinated. I'm like, how did you do that? I was like, just how did you do that? Mm-hmm. I have friends and I'm not able to convince them. And she said, oh, I offered to take her to get the shot and take her to lunch after. And I said, oh, that's so nice. That's so sweet. But I really liked that they didn't make any argument at all. They just said, I'll help you out. And it worked. It's that cause and effect. Like, that's what they say. They actually make a joke of it in Buddhism. They say, if a person hits you with a stick, do you get mad at the stick? But they say getting mad at the person is just as foolish, because there's a huge line of cause and effect behind it. It doesn't mean you don't work to stop, mm-hmm, you know, getting hit, but there's no real reason to get angry, because there's a lot of reasons behind why that happened, even if you don't understand them.
I think another lesson to take from this is it's not all about me, right?
Yeah.
Every person unmasked in the grocery store is not trying to hurt me. I may be the center of my world, but I am not the center of everyone else's world. And that's another good lesson to remember, that I don't have to take it personally.
Well, again, that's the Buddhist perspective, right? There's only to acknowledge there's basically one thing we can control in the universe, and that is just how we react to things.
And I think learning to look at your own strong reactions as a signal that's something you can dig more deeply into. That has been really helpful for me. Anger has a quality of single-pointedness and really focus on what is not right in a situation. That can be very useful, right? If we can transmute our anger from something that just blinds us and makes our head on fire to, it's more like a finger pointing at an injustice or something that's not right, then we can start to work with whatever is making us angry.
Yeah.
Rather than just literally being blinded by anger.
Yeah, yeah. I think talking about the power of anger is really powerful. It is seen as incredibly harmful from a Buddhist perspective. Tara Brach talks really well about this because she says anger is telling you something important.
Absolutely.
And the first thing you want to do is listen to that. It's not something to deny, like the spiritual bypass. Oh, just everything's in the nature of mind.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's you're angry for a reason. And of course, if you can, let some of the pain of anger dissipate. But try to find, why am I angry? There's some logical reason, some real deep need that underlies all anger.
Yeah.
I think some of it's just a pure need for safety.
Yes.
Of wanting to feel safe.
Let's talk a little bit about the decision of vaccinating our children.
Yeah.
Because that's a different thing. Again, you can do what you feel is right for yourself. And then as a parent or a guardian, you're in charge of another person and making choices in their best interests. First of all, I think it's important to acknowledge that everyone is trying to make the best decision for their child. I really do believe that. That no parent wants their child to get sick and die. No parent wants their child to suffer. And no parent wants their child to be the cause of someone else's illness and death.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to remember that even if our decisions look different and I may have an argument with the decision that someone else makes, I really do believe that everyone's just trying to make the best decision for their own child. And I think this is applicable to your own personal situation, Scott, with how you were raised, right?
Yeah, totally. I was raised as a Christian Scientist. I come from a Jewish background. My parents converted to Christian Science. A lot of people don't know what Christian Science is. It's not Scientology. A lot of people confuse it with that.
Mm-hmm.
It is a religion where you don't go to the doctor. You don't get vaccinated. You don't drink. You don't take any kind of mind or body altering substances, and you rely on prayer to heal you from any illness, for the most part. There's some latitude as an individual follower, but that's the general principle of the religion, is you don't go to doctors, you don't get vaccinated. So I was definitely an anti-vax household. I had no vaccines when I was a child, neither did my brother and sister. Luckily, we didn't get that sick when we were kids. But I want to talk a little bit about how I felt about that, because as a kid, I was proud, actually. Like, we had this special form. We had a legitimate religious exemption. Today, I think mm-hmm. a lot of people are trying to pretend like religious exemption, but like they got the religion yesterday.
This was a sincerely held belief on behalf of your parents, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Who imparted that to you?
Yeah, from birth, we was raised Christian Scientists. That was our religious value. I went to Sunday school on Sundays. We talked about it. When I got sick, we'd pray. And I got better, too. I got better after praying. So I believed in it. When I got to be 18, 19 and got into college, I went to Brown University. So it was so anti-religious. Mm-hmm. I had to hide that I was a Christian Scientist. I sneak off to Sunday school on Sunday because I just love spirituality. I love talking about the ideas of religion, things like Buddhism talks about, infinity, mm-hmm. like how the mind relates to matter and so on. But I have to say, I got really mad. I got pneumonia, and that's what got me starting to go to the doctor. Actually, it was my professor who said, whoa, you have pneumonia. You got to go to the doctor. I'm like, okay, I'll try that. Sure.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big switch from how you were raised, but I guess a lot of us in college try new things.
Yeah. Yeah. That was my wild college
years. Your rebellion.
Going to the doctor. But yeah, I went to the doctor and he gave me some antibiotics. So that was the first drugs that I took. And they really worked. I was like, whoa, this is good. And then after I recovered from that, I thought, okay, now it's time for me to get some health insurance, get immunized. But I'll tell you something. I was really mad at my parents. Like, I was really angry at them for raising me that way because I felt like it was irresponsible for myself and my brother and sister, but even more for other people. When I was a kid, I used to actually sit and imagine, what are the people next door doing right now? And then what are the people next door in this whole town? Like, later I realized these are actually kind of Buddhist meditations, mm-hmm. but I used to try to like expand my mind to think about what everyone else was doing at the moment. But yeah, what about the other people we endangered? So I think as a parent deciding not to vaccinate your kids, it's worth thinking how they're going to feel when they get older. Like, of course, we massively indoctrinate our kids with our own beliefs. I do the same thing too. I meditate with my daughter and I teach her my values on compassion. And she is very excited to get vaccinated. She wants to get vaccinated today. But I think it's understanding. I understand. Actually, my parents were trying to protect me in their way. Like, from our religion's perspective, it's actually the problems in your mind. it's not in your body when you get sick. So if you get vaccinated, if you take medical care, you actually don't solve the underlying problem. What you really need to do is to pray and to change the way your reality, which is not the way Buddhism sees it, by the way. Buddhism has go to doctors and take care of yourself. Although Buddhism does have a lot to say about the role of the mind in reality. So I think that's what I wanted to just share from my own perspective, is just that I was really angry having grown up in an anti-vax household. And I thought it was, and I'm not saying anyone else has to feel this way, but I was, and I felt it was selfish. I felt like it just wasn't taking into account the health of others.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely worth considering. And again, with young children, knowing that most of them don't get seriously ill from COVID, but we've always been concerned with making sure that our elders who are more vulnerable aren't affected. And so that's a great reason, in my opinion, to vaccinate my 7-year-old, who may or may not get really ill, but I want to make sure that he doesn't accidentally spread it to his grandparents who are in their 70s and more vulnerable. So it is a personal decision that everyone has to make. And in some ways, it feels more weighted than making the decision for yourself, because they're little people and you're responsible for their care. The choice that I'm making is to get my 7-year-old vaccinated as soon as possible. He is not looking forward to getting a shot, but I promised ice cream or something afterwards. So ice cream might help.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, my daughter hates shots. She hates the vaccinations, but she's really excited about this one. I wanted to go back to this idea of self and other, the way that we think about freedom in the United States. This is a big group project. In some ways, it's the first time the whole world came together to solve a problem. It's the things you read in science fiction novels where it always seems so unrealistic, like the whole world came together and they put their resources behind it. And we made a vaccine that normally takes 50 years to roll out and it only took 9 months. Like, it's actually completely amazing and a nice, joyful thing to think about. The world did succeed in this great group project, but then it's faltering a little bit in the last mile here. Like, and we're so spoiled too, because we dominated obtaining a vast plurality of the vaccination doses in the United States with all of wealth. We have a massive surplus of vaccines, and yet still we're not completely succeeding in this group project. Like, we've become worse at group projects in the US now, with the more and more the emphasis on the individual, which is part of our whole culture. So the thing that I like about Buddhism is how, from your own perspective, the way to treat yourself is, how can I benefit others through your body, speech, and mind? Like, that's ideally the way you make your decisions in your life. And this is actually Mahayana Buddhism. This Buddhism kind of focus on compassion, love. When I make decisions, hypothetically, I'm not saying I really do this
in the best of circumstances.
Yeah,
right?
In the best of circumstances. And I do think about it. I just don't always succeed, or I make kind of sometimes self-serving decisions. But how can I benefit others through my body, speech, and mind? That's what you think about, at least. But then when you think about others, you don't think, what do I need to make them do so that they will benefit others? But it's just like Thich Nhat Hanh said, it's compassion, understanding, even just giving people what they want, what they ask for, even if you don't agree with it, just giving people what they ask for. And I really like that value in Buddhism. It helps to understand other people. But I want to emphasize something, because I think a lot of times people will think, oh, I'm being compassionate by taking care of my daughter or something like that. But in the Buddhist view, like, the nuclear family isn't that different from yourself. Like, it's not necessarily altruism. Of course, it is another person, but it's very strongly identified with yourself, your partner, your children, and so on. So doing something you think is right for your child or only your family isn't necessarily like a virtue from the Buddhist perspective. It depends on your motivation, because then the wall can come up really hard around your family.
Absolutely.
And then nobody else really matters that much. And that's where your logic can fail, because it can make complete sense for your nuclear family not to get vaccinated. But then, like we're saying, you might kill someone's grandma. You might kill your own grandma.
If you want to be out in the world with other people, then that's where it has to be considered. And I found a quote earlier today from Chögyam Trungpa Rinpoche, who's been a huge influence in my life. Most of my experience with any kind of formal study in Buddhism has been in the Shambhala tradition. And this quote about compassion really spoke to me. This is from his book, Cutting Through Spiritual Materialism, which is a tremendous book that has been so helpful to me. He says, compassion is spacious and very generous. When a person develops real compassion, he is uncertain whether he is being generous to others or to himself, because compassion is environmental generosity, mm-hmm. without direction, without for me, and without for them. And that phrase, environmental generosity, really hit me. Mm. It's not about taking sides. It's not about, is this good for me? It's not about, is this good for you? When you really are feeling and learning to develop compassion, that's where I think the boundaries between self and other start to dissolve.
Yeah.
Because you don't see yourself as separate, everyone as interdependent and interconnected. Mm. A lot of this discussion has been, what's good for me is also good for others, or mm-hmm. I'm getting vaccinated because it's good for me and it's good for my community or good for my family. And in some ways, maybe we're not even focusing on the right things there. Mm-hmm. When you really develop compassion, I think it's about dissolving the boundaries and the identification with me and mine and you and yours.
Yeah, it's certainly something I think our great teachers talk about. They say there's two wings of the bird in, you know, the compassion-oriented mm-hmm. Buddhism, which is, they call it bodhicitta, or altruistic love mm-hmm. and compassion, and emptiness, which you're talking about, the interdependence. And so many teachers talk about how those two wrap around, that when you start to see the interdependence of reality, like right now, we're not speaking any words we made up. We're actually not even sharing ideas we made up ourselves. And a lot of our stories are things other we saw other people do. And it goes on and on. One of the first things I ever read Thich Nhat Hanh said that stuck with me, he said, you are only made of non-you elements. So this whole thing you say is you, both body and mind. It's completely dependent with others. And so in the moment, it seems separate. Like our body seems separate, our mind seems separate. But we're in continual exchange, and it starts to get a little new age. But like the earth, it's like one giant organism, or certainly all of humanity. It's more like we're one giant organism. And does one of your cells decide to like rebel and not take in the antibodies? So you just do whatever's right for the collective good mm-hmm. kind of naturally. But of course, it's not yours and my place to say what that is. That's the other thing, is like compassion isn't something to force on other people.
Yes. Be compassionate now.
Yeah.
Sadly. I order you.
Yeah.
So even though we all have lots of information about how the vaccine is likely to affect us, and we know that most people tolerate it pretty well, aside from a day or two of feeling lousy, we still know that this is not without risk, and side effects can be a little more severe. And so we ask ourselves, would it still be worth the risk to maybe save someone else's life? And you, Scott, had your own experience with side effects that were more than a sore arm and fatigue for a day or two. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so this is actually really interesting, because some people are worried about some of the more extreme side effects of the vaccine, which are admittedly pretty rare, but I had some of them. And it was only with my second shot. I got the Moderna vaccine, which turns out statistically to give you the best protection now. But I had several side effects that just didn't go away. There are side effects a lot of people have, but they didn't go away for me. So I had huge fatigue, which was actually for me like the worst, because I really like to have a lot of energy and do a lot of things, and just didn't go away for weeks, like 6-7 weeks. I was dizzy, like so dizzy I was falling over, that mm-hmm. level of dizziness, and it would not go away. I tried all these weird maneuvers the doctor gave me. I had tinnitus, so my ears mm-hmm. just started ringing. It was very annoying. So these actually lasted for 6-7 weeks, and I didn't know what to do. And then it was funny, because I was talking to my wife about it. I was like, oh my God, is this going to last forever? I talked to my doctor, and with these kind of systemic long-term issues, I think we can all acknowledge Western medicine isn't that good at addressing them. He offered me some drug to deal with dizziness, and one of these things where you read the label says may cause dizziness. So I didn't bother with that. And so this is actually, I think, a good place to talk about that we each do have our own areas that we engage and don't engage with Western medicine. Like a very common one is antibiotics, right? A lot of us, including myself, try to avoid antibiotics almost completely, because they also eliminate the beneficial bacteria inside your body. So like I've had my problems with Western medicine, okay? Sure. Not with epidemiology though. So anyway, these side effects I had were really serious. And so my wife said, oh, remember you went to that Tibetan doctor? So I went to a Tibetan doctor when I had some other similar problems a few years ago. And it really, and it worked amazingly.
And what did that Tibetan doctor advise you, or what did that person give you?
Yeah, so I went to her. It's very beautiful the way the Tibetan doctor works with you, because it's also a spiritual treatment. It's not for everybody. It's like Chinese medicine, but it's very tender. The person will sit and feel your pulse for a long time. So she gave me various things, herbs at night for sleeping, herbs in the morning for digestion, liver, kidney balance. And she said things like my diet, avoid sugar, a lot of kind of obvious things you'd think of, but to stay to a very healthy whole foods diet and eat more in the morning and less in the evening, but also some spiritual practices. Like she said, I should do a certain type of purification practice very early in the morning where you do all these prostrations. The Dalai Lama does it every morning, and it's also really good exercise.
I was going to say, it's do 100 burpees in the morning, and yeah, that'll like make you feel better too.
It is. It's just like that. So through this combination, the good news is it worked. It totally worked. It took a few weeks to kick in, and it's been gradual, but it really worked. And I think Tibetan medicine, I think most people would say, pretty far out on the spectrum. I want to acknowledge that. I had serious side effects. I couldn't resolve them normally. I went to some very alternative medicine. So I'm quite sympathetic and compassionate to people and your individual decisions you need to make. And I am actually nervous about getting my booster too, because they say I should get another Moderna. That's the recommendation, because it gives you the best protection, and I've already had it, but I'm a little nervous.
If it'll start up those kind of side effects again. Yeah. Something else that struck me as you were describing your interactions with this Tibetan doctor, I wonder what many of us would feel if we went to our Western doctor, our family doctor, and they just sat with us for a few minutes and felt our pulse and just gave us that kind of attention and that kind of gentleness, which is not usually a factor in our interactions with our medical industrial system as we have it now. I know a lot of doctors would love to be able to provide that kind of gentleness and attention, and they just can't because of the way the system is set up.
Yeah, well, it made me feel really loved. I think that's the thing, because I felt really alone and scared when I was a kid and I got sick. Because it was all on you. Like, it wasn't even my parents praying. It's like, you, like, something's wrong with your mind. That's how I felt. They're like, something's wrong with you and your mind, and you need to pray, and you need to get better, and it's your fault. That was my perspective on Christians. So I felt guilty when I was sick. Like, it was all my fault. So I really generally feel really nice when I see a doctor, but especially a Tibetan doctor, because I felt so much love and compassion from her. That was my experience with alternative medicine. What about you? Your husband's a doctor. And one of the problems is that all this suffering is hidden, right? Like, we hide everything away. Death is also hidden away in our culture. Like, it's so hard to see a dead person. That's part of life. We also aren't seeing the sick people. So tell me about that. Because as you and I talk every week, I've seen you often very emotional, kind of on the verge of tears, talking about what your husband is seeing.
Yeah. He's a hospital-based physician at a busy urban hospital here in Kentucky. And I think that the situation has changed over the months. In the first couple of months of COVID, obviously, everybody was scrambling and everybody was just scared. And there were a lot of people who got sick and a lot of people who came into the hospital. And it was really hard for him and his coworkers because there was only so much they could do for them. And they were also scared themselves of getting sick. Several of his colleagues got sick, or entire families got sick. Everyone recovered, thank goodness. This was definitely something in my mind that it was easy. It was relatively easy for us to stay home and be isolated as a family, but he had to go into work every day. And we knew that he was around COVID patients, and this was before there was a vaccine. It was just very fearful. And I know he felt bad for a lot of his patients. We were elated when he was able to get vaccinated, at least I was. He got vaccinated in December of 2020, towards the end of December, his first shot. And I remember the relief that I felt that, okay, he's got some protection now since he was first in line as a healthcare worker. And now here we are in the fall of 2021. And over the summer, there was a huge surge in our area. And it was almost entirely unvaccinated people that were being hospitalized, partially because we've done a really good job of getting older folks vaccinated and they're more vulnerable. The unvaccinated folks who were going in the hospital were younger, more in their 50s and 60s rather than their 70s and 80s. And I don't want to speak for my husband, but I definitely noticed it was a different situation for him, mm-hmm. dealing with patients who were very sick mm-hmm. and knowing that they had a tool that could have helped them a lot. Yeah. That I think that changes your feelings a lot as a healthcare provider. And obviously, you always want to do the most you can to help everyone. And I just noticed, I'm sure there was a growing feeling of frustration mm. and anger among healthcare workers that they were taking care of people who had made a decision not to use the tool that was available to them.
Yeah.
And compassion fatigue is very real. I think that can get caught up in ideas of ego, that it's harder to be compassionate when you're judging someone else's behavior.
Yeah.
And it's very reasonable from the perspective of a healthcare worker to say, why didn't you do what you could have done to keep yourself from getting sick? That is very reasonable. And it makes it harder to be able to extend yourself, I yeah. think. So that's something that I think healthcare workers have definitely been struggling with, just from where I sit.
And I think for probably one of the biggest objects of compassion for all, no matter where you are on the spectrum of belief about vaccines and the virus, is for all the healthcare workers, right? These people, before there was a vaccine, they're literally putting their lives on the line. And there are stories of people who died, young people in their 20s, nurses yep. and doctors, because the amount of virus you're exposed to matters. If you're exposed to a lot, you're more likely to get it, and it's more likely to be really severe. So talk about compassionate heroes, bodhisattvas, all these healthcare workers who are willing to risk their lives to treat people with COVID when there was no treatment for it. They didn't know how well any of this protective gear was going to protect you. And they see their colleagues get really sick, get in the ICU, and even die.
Yeah, yeah. It was a very scary time. And I know people who have left healthcare after this experience. And I know people who have decided to go into healthcare yeah. after this experience.
You mentioned compassion fatigue. And I want to talk about that because I think when you have a Buddhist training, the word compassion is a little bit different than the word in the dictionary. And I think it's like, according to my teachers, compassion fatigue is a little bit of a misnomer because really what you would say it is an empathy fatigue. There's actually a bunch of scientific studies on this empathy versus compassion. And they say that empathy itself is exhausting. That's what leads to burnout, is just feeling the feelings of other people around you, but just filling up with them. And it's very common for workers in healthcare, hospice, and so on. The empathy is exhausting. And another thing you talked about, the judgment too, when you start to get mad at people who just could have done something small to save themselves a lot of trouble and to save other people a lot of pain. But compassion is different than empathy. It includes empathy, but empathy is just the first step. You identify with other people's feelings. You try to imagine what it's like to be them and how they're feeling. But then you have this strong wish to help. That's compassion. And it doesn't necessarily mean you are able to help. Right. You just have a strong wish, but that wishing to help, just saying, if I could take away the COVID illness from everyone who has it right now, of course, that's a meditation. And of course you can't, but it just turns out that thought is so helpful for your mind. It just works. It works right now as I'm thinking of it. It's just, oh yeah, if I could, I would definitely do that. And if I could protect, let's not even say it's through vaccination, but if I could somehow protect everyone from getting this illness, from getting COVID, of course I would. If I could eradicate it from the earth through magic, through just snapping my fingers, of course I would do that. Dr. Rick Hansen talks a lot about this. You want to stick with these good thoughts, whether they're things that really happened or things that you wish would happen. And it doesn't mean they are going to happen. It's not some new age magic like The Secret, you know, that if you just think it, they will. No, things will keep going on. People will be sick. But by thinking that thought, it's so expanding to your heart. And it's the antidote to that compassion fatigue. Because when you have those thoughts, it gives you more energy.
I really like that distinction between empathy and compassion and thinking about fatigue. Maybe the fatigue comes from coming up against our practical material limits, that you can't fix everything and you can't save everything. Yeah. But to keep that spark in your heart, that's still your intention, even if you can't achieve it.
Yeah, and to also be compassionate to yourself, like to realize there are limits. Tara Brach talks a lot about this is where it all starts. That's where actually all this kind of outward verbal violence and negative feelings and thoughts comes from is just not loving ourselves sufficiently, accepting ourselves. So I think that's actually a really good sort of, that Thich Nhat Hanh quote about understanding that all we ever want is understanding, we have to apply that to ourselves too and just accept wherever we are on this issue. Well, it actually brings up one final story, which is I have a friend, he and his partner, boyfriend and girlfriend, but they've been together for, I don't know, five years. And he's vaccinated and his girlfriend isn't. And it's caused a lot of practical problems in their life.
Obviously, I don't know anyone else who's in that situation.
Yeah,
I feel like everyone else I know, partners are on the same page. That could be very tricky.
Yeah, and it's such a good, my friend, he is a Buddhist, but he's just a naturally compassionate person. I really admire him. And I was very impressed just how gentle he was with the issue because, I mean, his partner, she lost her job, first of all. Her job required vaccination, so she lost her job. So now, like, it's causing real problems in our relationship. Now he's financially responsible for the whole household. But he's only applied understanding. He just naturally took that Thich Nhat Hanh view. Like, he loves his girlfriend. He doesn't want to break up. And he does not agree with her reasons, but he understands them. He understands and he accepts her reasons for not getting vaccinated. And they make their decision. They can't see as many people. She can't work. But he loves her. And they want to stay together. And so he's accepted that. And I was very impressed with that story. It's kind of maybe a nice story to end on. It goes with that, like, losing, that losing thread that we talked about, like, not getting your way. And look what it does for my friend's mind, too. Look what it does for our minds as we hear that story. It's so inspiring, honestly, to me, to hear how compassionate and loving he can be and accepting. I'm not sure I could do that. I don't think I would be that way with my partner.
No, I'm just sitting here thinking I would find that incredibly challenging. I don't think I could do that either. So I don't want anybody listening to this saying that we think that you can accept any idea that comes your way, or if you can't accept a deep disagreement with your partner, you've somehow failed. I think this is senior level stuff we're talking here. That's really fascinating. But it does show there are different ways to deal with the issue.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe that's a nice place to end. Just to remember that Thich Nhat Hanh quote, that love is understanding the people around you versus giving them advice or trying to change them.
Yep. You can't be angry at the lettuce.
Yeah. Don't get angry at the lettuce. This was really fun having this conversation with you, Tara. Well, hopefully we'll see. If you're hearing this now at the end of the episode, then you at least enjoyed it or found it interesting. Feel free to send us feedback on this format, how you like it, whether we can improve. And appreciate you listening. And I hope we struck the right balance between sharing our opinions and trying to be open-minded and compassionate.
Thank you for having me. This has been fun.
If you enjoyed this episode, please consider making a donation to our podcast. A Skeptic's Path to Enlightenment is a nonprofit organization. All our content is free and ad-free, thanks to our generous donors. To support us now, visit our website at skepticspath.org. We accept cash, credit, Bitcoin, and other cryptocurrencies, and your donations are tax deductible in the U.S. If you'd like to deepen this conversation, please join our newsletter or our social media accounts on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, where we can be found under the name Skeptics Path. And we'd be grateful if you took a moment right now to review us in your podcast app. Reviews help new people discover our podcast. Thanks to Tara Anderson for producing and editing this episode, Christian Parry and Chris Bolton for audio mastering, and Jason Waterman for marketing and digital production. We wish you a wonderful day.